Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. It's hour two on this Thursday, one of the exciting days on the calendar. And some people say, what, Thursday? October 27th? Why do you have a Halloween party? No, it's the morning after the Breeders' Cup pre-entries are released, and we go through a certain set of traditions. Tim Schramm just fulfilled one, and as we mentioned with Tim, we sort of started Breeders' Cup anticipation season with Jim Goodman and Tim Schramm. I don't know. It must have been back in, it might have been late August even, or early September. Jim joins us from Keeneland. And Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I think it was like 3 years ago. It seems like we've been working on this Breeders' Cup for a long time. It's a year-long process. I think it was probably in July when we talked about it.
There you go. There you go. And, you know, you mentioned, of course, the... call it a makeup cup, as it were. The 2 years ago, and the COVID cup that made Keeneland. It was the strangest atmosphere ever, obviously for a cup. And the Breeders' Cup thoughtfully said, we've got to give Keeneland a chance to have their second full cup. So everything in place for that next Friday and Saturday.
I actually like that COVID Cup in 20 because I was able to go down to the rail, watch the races with only about 3,500, 4,000 people here. It was really cool for us, the ones that had to work it. But it was so bizarre. I know the fans missed their chance to come to Keeneland, and I think they're going to make up for it in about 9 days from now, something like that.
Wow.
8 days.
Yeah, what are we?
I can't believe it's that close.
Well, it always sneaks up, no matter how much preparation you have, and it, you know, as I mentioned to Tim, Jim, this is a, I don't really have a feel for this when there were the recent Churchill Cups, and with the Keeneland season winding down then, but this does seem like a, kind of a first time happenstance with Churchill opening on Sunday and running cards Wednesday, Thursday, and then the scene shifts back to Lexington Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, so in 2015, which was our first Breeders' Cup, we did a Thursday card that was a dress rehearsal, as it were, for the Breeders' Cup. We have a lot of things at Keeneland because of the size of the track that we have to do differently than Churchill and Santa Anita does. For example, we have to park most people off-site and shuttle them in here. And it worked very well in 2015, but we didn't know that it was going to work very well. So what we did was on Thursday, we did a practice day, and we set up the track, obviously. All the parking spaces had to be just like they were on Friday and Saturday, and we shuttled people in from the remote areas. It was a very expensive process for us, but we learned a lot, and we've got that under our belt now. And then we've done it in 2020, and all the processes were the same except for the crowds. So we didn't do that this time, and I think when they awarded the dates, Churchill, we didn't want to go a complete week without racing in Kentucky. So Churchill stepped in and said, well, we'll normally start on Sunday. We'll just do our Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday card, flip it back to Keeneland for Friday, Saturday, back to Churchill on Sunday. So it is a little unique that we're not having racing, but to be quite honest, we need these 4 or 5 days after the end of our meet to get ready for Breeders' Cup.
Which makes perfect sense. And, you know, certainly the regular, you know, regular visitors and you know, Jim, you're regarded by not more than regarded. You're revered in the contest playing circles by players for the way in which you accommodate their needs spring and fall. Again, this is the, you know, another opportunity for a Breeders' Cup betting challenge at Keeneland. I mean, talk about what you need the players to know, and if there's anybody on the fence, or if there's even room for more players to come to town and partake in the BCBC on site.
We are really tight. I listened to your segment with Tim, and Tim's correct. I'm tired of hearing from him, and he's tired of hearing from me, because we've worked together for a long time. I fully enjoy working with Tim. He's a great ambassador for the game. He does a wonderful job with the BCBC. I've helped him at remote locations at Santa Anita and Del Mar in the past and in Churchill. So we work together well. I know he's very tight on tickets right now. So if you are planning on coming to Keeneland and entering the BCBC, you need to do it today. And get with Tim. Go ahead and enter on the website, BCBC, Breeders' Cup / BCBC, and you can get through to our ticket system and enter the tournament, and then Tim will get back in touch with you with tickets. It is very tight right now. We have the entire third floor dedicated to the BCBC, but in 2015, we had around 225 entries here, and I think we're going to have somewhere around 275 this time, because we generally think we'll have half the entries here at the track. So we have enough space for what we've got coming right now. The other options, though, if you're getting ready to play in it, obviously, you can get online and play, and you can register, especially on some of the on ExpressBet up until Friday at post time. If you're going to play on our other ADWs, you need to get registered by Thursday, and you can certainly win your way in on horse players and designate to them where you want to play. So lots of ways to get in the BCBC. We don't want to shut anybody out, but if you're trying to come to Keeneland, it's only a week away, so we need to get you in here and get you a spot to sit down, and we'll take great care of you when you get here.
And Jim, I mean, there's going to be players that you know have made other you know, seating arrangements in the pavilions, you know, the chalets and such, and they can play from their seat, right? I mean, it's not like they have to be in the building by you.
Absolutely. Every self-serve in the building, and there will be self-serve machines in every venue, including the chalets, you can play the tournament from there. You can't play it with a clerk, but you have to play it with a self-serve. So we got self-serves. I think I've got about 450 self-serves throughout the facility for Breeders' Cup. So plenty of places to play. You don't have to be in the tournament room to play.
There you go. In terms of I will again reinforce that if you do come upstairs and end up you know, with Jim and his team looking after you, those of you that have done it, you need no instruction or encouragement. For those that'll be experiencing it for the first time, it'll become, you know, immediately one of your favorite experiences in the game. So can't be recommended more highly. Jim, in terms of the general population, what else do people need to know about next Friday and Saturday from a general Keeneland perspective? What advice can you give them?
The advice I would give, if you've already got your tickets, you're already been instructed as to where you can park. We have the parking spot on track, which are at the, where, if you're familiar with Keeneland, it's about a half mile away at the meadow or the hill. And we have shuttles running from there. Hopefully you've already bought your parking pass. If you haven't bought your parking pass on track, you need to buy a parking pass that's called Park and Ride at the Kentucky Horse Park. And we have great shuttles coming from the horse park running continuously. My wife did that in 2015, and it was wonderful. And so I think those spots are still available. Get your hotel room if you haven't done it. But if you have any questions regarding anything in Lexington, anything at Keeneland, please get in touch with me. It's jgoodman@keeneland.com. Be glad to help you with any questions. And I think if you're coming to Keeneland for the first time, it looks a lot different than it does during the live race meet. We've got chalets from the clubhouse all the way past the top of the stretch. And those facilities are necessary for us to take care of people here at Keeneland. We don't have enough grandstand space or dining room space, just like San Anita and Churchill. So we have to build it out, but they are wonderful experiences. I was privy to be in some of those chalets walking through in 2015. They're exactly the same as they were, a double-decker, a triple-decker. You will not find a more unique view from the top of the stretch from that triple-decker. And if you're noticing, if you're watching on TV, you see that triple-decker in the background when you have a head-on shot of the starting gate for the Classic. It's really a cool place to be, and it's a cool place to look at if you're looking at Keeneland on TV. But if you're Breeders' Cup Challenge, hopefully you're already in. If you're not, get in quickly and get in touch with Tim to get you a spot here. But we'd love to have you here at Keeneland. We're looking so forward to it.
Outstanding. And Jim, you're a quality handicapper and player in your own right. Some initial feel on the card, and you know, your certain horses maybe that you're tracking and you've been getting excited about betting next Friday and Saturday?
Well, it is always such a challenge. And one thing you mentioned the two-day pick six with Tim. I want to cover something like that with a betting menu. The two-day pick six is a nice gimmick. What we hate, I'd rather have a really good pick five, a really good pick four, and a really good pick three on the day of, because we, from a racetrack standpoint, and I don't want you to think we're greedy, because I want everybody to have a good time. I want everybody to win. But if you're tying up your money in a two-day pick six, that's money you don't have in your bankroll to play in that late pick four on Friday that you really like. And let's say somebody, you know, decides to go in all in on a two-day pick six, and you spend $1,000 on it. That's money that you could be turning, and that is selfish on our part. We want you to win. We want you to bet it back. But that's the reason that a two-day pick six to me is not ideal. I know Churchill did the all dirt, and that's a nice gimmick. But I think for Breeders' Cup, we've got so many wagering options for you. We added a pick five on Saturday, so there's three pick fives, there's four pick fours. I love a rolling pick three on Breeders' Cup days. I think they're more logical, more, you know, there aren't very many free squares. Everybody's talking about Flightline being a free square in the Classic, and he probably is. But there's no free squares in the Distaff. I mean, you can make a case for it. The top three horses there are, to me, very tight. I love Malathot. I think she runs well at Keeneland. She looks so good here during, you know, earlier in the fall meet, and I'm going to use her in the Distaff, but I'm not going to use her by herself. I think the Classic, if you can get away from Flightline, you can make some serious money. But I want to talk about that two-day pick six. I think the turf pick threes we're offering are great wagering opportunities. There's no shortage of wagering opportunities for you on this card. I like Warlike Goddess in the turf. I think Goddess, that she loves this place, and this was a spot that she fits. It's a tough race. Highland Chief's gonna be tough in here at a race over the track, and the Distaff, like I mentioned, the Breeders' Cup Mile is gonna be a tough race. Mm-hmm. I think the Appleby crew coming in here, if you don't look at Charlie Appleby's horses, you're not going to cash a lot of tickets on Breeders' Cup Day. That's going to be the piece of advice I'm going to have, because he's got a strong contingent coming. But I think I don't really have some strong feelings on the Friday card. The two-year-olds are very difficult to handicap. But I think in the I'm trying to scroll through to get here. The juvenile fillies, there's a horse that ran here in the Alcibiades called Chop Chop that is very interesting to me. Go back and watch that race, and she ran huge first time on turf, and first time on dirt coming from a Kentucky Downs race. The other thing that I like to look at is horses that were successful at Kentucky Downs that followed that up at Kiemut. That's a wagering angle that I'm going to try to find in some of these Breeders' Cup races.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. I like it. The pick three advice, that falls into a discussion on big weekends and this particular weekend year after year, which is, as difficult as these sequences are, if you're a pick five player, back up and make it a little easier on yourself. If you're a pick four player, pick threes. If you're a pick three player, doubles. There's ways to increase your likelihood of success, and that has always been one of our credos, essentially.
I think the same factor when you're looking at a novice player, you try to get that person to play win place, or you try to get that person after they get that, go to exactus, but don't even teach them about a pick three. Don't even teach them about a pick four, pick five. Get that person where they can have some confidence in their handicapping ability and the way to cash tickets. It's the same thing as Breeders' Cup. Looking at a pick five on a Tuesday at Parks is much different than a pick five on Breeders' Cup weekend. And it takes a lot of handicapping skill. And I think if you just swallow your pride a little bit and drop down one level or drop down two levels, you'll find yourself cashing tickets. And that's what we're all in it for. And pick threes pay amazingly. I mean, when you have full fields, if you have an opinion that you can wheel a horse both front and back, and you have an opinion in the fifth race, so you go third, fourth, fifth, and fifth, sixth, seventh, you can make a lot of money these days, and I really like the pick threes, 50-cent minimum, and they pay very well. And then you can build your bankroll on Friday hitting pick threes, and you can take a shot on Saturday at the big money.
Jim, there was a question asked yesterday when I put the betting menu out there. Somebody asked about the consos, and they were kind of grousing about the four of five. Yeah, and it's a very funny topic, and it doesn't actually get kicked around all that often. I mean, there's people that ask me constantly, when is Naira going to introduce a conso? And when Naira added pick fives, they had a long internal debate about whether there should be a four of five conso. I haven't published what I found in the charts from 2015 and 2020. I thought maybe, just rolling into my head, I thought, maybe a conso on the Breeders' Cup cards is pretty advantageous. When I looked at them, I really only found one, the one that ended with Audible 2 years ago. That was like $240 or so. The other four or five consos were very much more mundane in the other, the other offerings. I mean, obviously, we're operating under the Keeneland rules, so there's going to be consos. What's your opinion, and what do players tell you when it comes to the pros and cons of pick five consolations?
It is really mixed, and I'm the one who did the consos here, and the reason I did, I was the first one in Kentucky, or Keeneland was the first one in Kentucky, not me personally, but Keeneland, to do pick fives, and I chose to copy the pick six rules or transfer those pick six rules and make them a pick five, and so I set up consos. Churchill for a long time didn't have a pick five. Then when they did a pick five, they brought it in under the Fairgrounds model, which basically didn't have any carryover provisions, which to a track is not very good. And then they converted theirs to a carryover. So we have a carryover plus consoles. I can argue both ways. I know that it cuts the big win down to by 25%. We take 25% of the net pool and distribute it among all the people that have 4 out of 5. So the person that hits for a $50,000 pick five only gets $40,000. But that person also gets multiple consoles because he's got, by definition, he has a number of consoles. Every one of the losing tickets he had to hit 4 out of 5. So it's not uncommon for a big ticket to have 20 consoles. So he or she is getting some payback. And the rest of that money is distributed to people who play back the next race or play back the next day rather than the entire amount going to a very few people. So that's my argument for consoles. My argument against consoles is, you know, if you hit a big ticket, you deserve to get paid for it. And why am I giving 25% of it to losers? My way of thinking is 4 out of 5 is not a loser. And there's so many times when you hit 4 out of 5 and you get nosed out in the last race, and to get something back helps the racetrack and I think helps the horse player. That's my opinion. It's about 50-50. I get comments about it, and it's mostly from big players. The smaller players like it because they get something back for picking 4 out of 5. Same thing as getting 5 out of 6. Now, the consoles are not huge unless you've got 2 big bombs that come in. If you only have 1 big bomb, a lot of people have 4 out of 5. So that's my feeling on consoles. We've talked about it internally. We're one of the outliers. I think Gulfstream does it, but NYRA in California don't do it. So we talk about that every year, and we may change it next year. But right now, you're going to have consoles in Breeders' Cup.
Well, and there's that answer as we continue to answer your questions here on At the Races. Jim, it really should be a lot of fun. Everything that I think players were hoping for in terms of the quality of the assemblies, it really came to pass. I mean, there were a couple of divisions that were a little murky 3-4 months ago, notably the 2 sprint divisions, and they ended up filling up with candidates. So, invariably, the action on the oval takes care of itself.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting card, and we've got a superstar in Flightline. We kind of had a perfect storm in 2015 with American Pharoah, and the only opportunity for a Triple Crown winner to do what was deemed the Grand Slam, and it was this place was electric. I think if Flightline lives up to his hype, coming down that stretch on the Classic is going to be very similar. And I was out in the grandstand when Pharoah came down the stretch. I have never heard that grandstand louder, and I actually felt it move. And I think that same kind of excitement will be with Flightline and will be with Malathot and Nest in the Distaff, and the other races are just great betting races. I do want to plug something, though, but you noticed the Breeders' Cup was smart enough to pick up my $3 all-turf pick 3 on Friday.
You bet. Was there, and then it's a 50-cent denomination on Saturday, so I want people to appreciate the distinction. What was that conversation? How did that all come down?
Well, so actually Tim and I talked about that way back in the spring before we set up a wagering menu, and we looked at the races that we had on each day, and of course we have 4 turf races that are great turf races on Saturday. So it's kind of a no-brainer to make it a pick 4 rather than a pick 3. We only have 3 Breeders' Cup turf races on Friday. So when we decided to do a pick 3, let's kind of go into this niche that Keeneland has already created. We've had the turf pick 3 for 2 years now, and it does about $100,000, $100,000 to $200,000 a day. And, you know, we think in this particular day, I think we'll do $500,000 in it. That's what I expect, maybe more. And it just fits well. A pick 3 is easier. The $3 denomination allows people to play a ticket that's going to pay better than a $1, and it limits the number of combinations that you can pick, so it makes it even bigger. So it was just one of those things that was unique to Keeneland that Naira picked up on last year. They did a $3 pick three for a while, and it was, we didn't want to make a higher denomination on Saturday. That one's tough enough with four fields of turf horses. So that's how it came about.
Fair enough. I also want to do something that I just, because I pulled up, I looked last night and went back to give people a feel for the undercard offerings leading in. And I bring this up, Jim, because if we go back to, I'm going to guess it was 2015. I do have the charts here somewhere because I'm ridiculous and I keep all this stuff. But one of my really nice hits in the 2015 Cup was that pick four that utilized the first two races. I guess this was on Saturday. The first two races on Saturday, the Mongolian Saturday, who beat Lady Shipman in the turf sprint, and I guess what was the dirt race? Anyway, whatever it was, I hit a pick four using two of the races, you know, the non-cup races, and it, for like 3,600, and it really made the weekend in a lot of ways.
Yeah, good start of the day, yeah.
So just one of those. I'm going to put this up to give everybody an idea. There's a maiden two-year-old race on Friday that opens the card, or at least in the book. If Ben Huffman, you know, if they draw it the way the book is written up, the first in the book is a 7-furlong two-year-old maiden filly group. Then there's the Heedley and the allowance of 6.5 for 3 and ups, non-winners of a race other than or which have never won two. Then there's an allowance optional claiming 7 on the dirt as the third race on Friday. The Hagen is 8.5 going long on dirt, 3 and ups. And then there's the former Marathon, which is now the TAA. That is the fifth race ahead of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint. That's Friday.
Yeah, and we've structured those. We have a pick five that would be all undercard races. And then the pick four starts the second race, which is our normal card on a Friday. So the pick four starts the second race. And then the pick four that you're probably talking about that would work on Saturday, there is a pick four that starts in the fourth race on Friday where you would have actually two races of the undercard and then two races, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint and then the Juvenile Fillies. So you've got a lot of opportunities there. And the pick six actually starts with race five, one of the undercard races, and has five Breeders' Cup races in it. Then you get to the Breeders' Cup, and you have a pick five and a pick four and an all-turf pick three and those special doubles that we haven't mentioned, the Juvenile Fillies going into the Fillies, the Juvenile going into the Classic, the Juvenile Turf going into the Turf. So all kinds of ranging opportunities on Friday. But, yeah, the undercard races are really nice. We were fortunate enough to get some extra money, and those purses are nice, and everybody wants to race their horse. Even if they don't have a Breeders' Cup horse, they want to be here on Breeders' Cup Day. So those races are going to be great races in and of themselves.
Well, and of course, for those that are our owners, you know, the other 363 days a year, the answer is no. You're not going to call Keeneland and say, "I'm in the third race on Friday, and I'm bringing six people."
Yeah, that's tough. And we will get some of that.
I'm sure you'll compensate those people as best you can. You'll do all you can for them.
We will. We love the horsemen here. We try to treat them with the respect they deserve. And I think everybody wants to win a race at Keeneland.
Well, and finally, Jim, we should also include the activities that'll happen. You know, you get a 24-hour respite, at least the staff around Keeneland, and you know, the grandstand won't be occupied. But starting on Monday, after Fasig Tipton gets their evening in the sun or evening under the moonshine, the night of stars, and of course there is racing Sunday following Breeders' Cup, there is racing at Churchill on Sunday, but then the big, enormous, important November sale takes over on Monday after the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, we have a joke around here that nobody gets a day off at Keeneland from Labor Day until Thanksgiving. And that is not an extreme position, because we go from the September sale to the October live meet to Breeders' Cup to the November sale. And thankfully, in my job, I don't have any direct responsibility for the sale, but there are people here, our broadcast people, for example, our maintenance people, they do not get a break from September through Thanksgiving. And it's a really great time of year for us to work here. It's also very demanding. So if you see me at Breeders' Cup Friday and I'm not my usual friendly self, I'm overworked. That's what it is. But yeah, we actually have the biggest job is getting the barns. If you think about September, then October meet, then we've got all the Breeders' Cup horses across Rice Road in those barns. So they had to be vacated prior to the Breeders' Cup horses getting in there this week. And then those horses have to move out on the main, in the main barn section right after the Breeders' Cup so we can get horses in for the sale. And there are barns that are being used during the Breeders' Cup for sale horses, obviously, because we start right after it's over with. So it's a big job, but we've got some of the best people in the world working at this racetrack. And I hope that people, when they come to Keeneland, they see the result of that. I know before I first came to work here, I would come into Keeneland and I was the happiest person in the world, because you walked in, it's pristine, everybody's nice to you, you see the races and you go home. And I had no idea before I came to work here how hard our staff works. And I hope that people appreciate it, because we try to do the best we can for people, and you'll see the result when you come to Breeders' Cup. I feel confident about that.
Yeah, and non-Breeders' Cup as well, April and into October each year. And Jim Goodman, as popular and as appreciated a conduit for horse players as there is anywhere in the game. Jim, I appreciate it, and look forward to seeing you this weekend.
You're very welcome, Steve. Look forward to have a safe trip down here, buddy.
I appreciate it. Keeneland Jim, everybody, if you're not following, you should be. Keeneland Jim, Jim Goodman, everybody, who's on the right side of every issue. Bottom of the hour, just a little bit past, and I'm going to reach out for one Charles Simon, who has been he's been a gadfly. He was at the sale. He actually pulled down a what looks to be a very nice street boss. We'll see what Chuck has to say about that. But I think he's by now he might be in the car, and I don't think he was going back for the fourth day of the sale. By the way, another good day yesterday, and it looks like they will. It looks like they will smash records at the Fasig Tipton October sale, and Chuck himself was trying to contribute to that record, and boy, you said you would have gone further on that street boss.
Well, we didn't have too much more to go, but the sale prices are crazy. I mean, it's nuts to think how strong the market is, especially for at the top of the market. Even grass horses that used to be bargains aren't anymore.
Not with the purses. Not with the purses out there, Chuck. All you had to do was spend an afternoon at Kentucky Downs, and frankly, it goes well beyond Kentucky Downs. I mean, those same numbers are close to those numbers. At Keeneland, at Churchill, you just heard Jim Goodman mention that the KTDF, the development fund and KTA monies and so forth, make this these other races on the undercard for Breeders' Cup advantageous. Numbers at obviously at Churchill, six figure numbers as soon as that turf course gets playable, and even at Ellis. even at Ellis, and you can run your turf horse in the winter over the synthetic at Turfway.
Well, listen, it's probably the best time to ever to be an owner if you have a good horse or even a decent horse. You have great purses in Kentucky, and that's just going to keep going up. You have great purses at Arkansas. New York purses are still really good. You don't want to advertise this fact, but it's not exactly like you got to beat 12 horses every race either. So you're dealing with, over the last 5 years, a dramatically increased purse structure, and yet our full crop keeps going down, and it's something that's confusing on the face of it, because you would think that this would be an easy sell, that you can literally make your expenses for a horse with one win at some of these tracks, and not in a stake race, in a maiden race, or an allowance race.
Right.
And that just wasn't the case before. I had no plans on going to the sale. Pete Denk and Kerry Thomas, who teach T Bloodstock, called me and said, "Hey, you want to come down and work the sale?" And I was like, "Well, I don't really have anything going on, and let me see what the weather is going to look like down there." It was really nice. Actually, this weekend was beautiful. And they're buying a horse for a guy named Biff Pogge and his son Sam. Biff actually is the associate head coach at the University of Michigan football. He ran a legendary program in high school program in Baltimore, St. Francis. And I believe HBO did a 3 or 4 part series on it a couple of years back. But they're in the market for one good horse. And that's the toughest thing to do is to try to buy one good horse for in that 50 to 100 range. Because it's difficult to put it this way. The horses who have the physical characteristics, even if they don't have the pedigree, they sell far better than they used to. It used to be that horses that didn't have a whole lot of sire power or didn't have a whole lot of pedigree just wouldn't sell that good. And nowadays, people are a lot more in tune to the physical part. And we bid on a couple horses that we had valued, 50, 60, 75. Maybe we'll go. I'll have to go a little higher. And they went for 155, 210, 190. And these are not horses that are by real hot stallions that had huge pedigrees. They really didn't have much pedigree at all. And that's kind of the ones we were looking for. We were just looking for a good racehorse. And this filly who we wound up getting, Street Boss filly, from Joe Sykes, Brookdale. It's a Virginia bred, which is another real positive, because when you look at the fact that Churchill Downs bought Colonial, and I know everyone kind of gets down on Churchill Downs, and rightfully so in some cases, but they're incentivized at this point to run more and more there, because the more dates they run, the more slot machines they get. So I believe they capped it at 50. So they ran 27 dates last year. They're going to run 50 dates. I don't know if they're going to run them next year, but they're going to run them soon. So you're going to Virginia bred. I mean, I think there was 100 Virginia bred born last year. So there's still some strength in the regional markets. And I mean, honestly, it's a good time to own horses. I just wish more people realize that.
Well, and that's one of the areas, everybody has a tendency to focus on the set of core issues that are perceived as being, linchpins to long-term success. And for whatever reason, you and I have discussed this, ownership initiative, and that's not to say that, you know, Toba, for instance, in fact, their last they just had a confirmation clinic, and the stuff is always well attended, and there are certainly, you know, you had that Minnesota program that is ongoing, that encourages ownership. It's the one area that, you know, that could be quantified and you know, be instantly impactful, and it's what we need the most. Now, there's a corollary to that, Chuck, which is, if we're bringing in new owners, they all can't gravitate to the same top, you know, 10% of the horsemen. We need new owners, and we need horses more widely distributed. That's as big of an issue as the need for the, you know, for fresh faces.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, there's a lot of core issues that don't get addressed in this business. And one of the ownership recruitment issues is that no one thinks it's their job, basically. You know, even though some places like racetracks, to me, I mean, your best customers a lot of times are owners. Owners don't come to the track and not spend money. Owners don't come to the track by themselves. And, you know, they're supplying the product for you. And, you know, it just gets to be a supply and demand thing. And demand is still strong, but supply is not. And I just don't understand why tracks don't at least do, you know, minimal something, a little bit here. Put some links on your website, you know, like, it's not that hard. And, you know, ownership is important, as you know, the people who betting are important as well, but, and you know, you can get this chicken and egg contest here about, you know, who's more important. But the fact of the matter is, without owners putting horses on the track, then there's nothing to bet on. So, you know, yeah, in a lot of ways, in a lot of places, that we mentioned before, are getting helped out by non-handle sources. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't still be trying to maximize that. It's kind of bizarre, and it just is one of those things that I don't think anybody really, you know, is a leader on this. And I think that's what this business lacks as an industry, leadership. We don't have leadership. We have people that want to preach to us. We have people that want to take from us. We have people that want to tell us what to do. But there's no real leadership. And the NFL turned into the Goliath that it did because of the leadership of Pete Rozelle and his ability to get all the parties together. And he got the strong teams to understand the value of the weak teams, where everybody shared revenues and all ships rising. And that's not what has happened in racing at all. And in racing, of course, it's a lot different situation than regular sports.
Yeah.
But you still, there's ways of leading. And it just doesn't happen very often in this world. I mean, hell, we're not even allowed to talk about a lot of stuff. I can't tell you how many people came up to me. I would say it was about 50-50. Because I was a surprise visitor at the sale. It was like, oh, you're getting back into trading? No. But the other 50% was people that wanted to talk about the issues, because they said, well, we know you'll talk about it. We know you'll say it. I talked to quite a few members of the new HISA Horsemen's Committee. And I'll be honest, they seem pessimistically optimistic, you know, like, which is bizarre to say, but it's kind of like this group should have been formed a year ago, not now. We've already made the rules that are, you know, despite the flowery sentiments of press releases that everyone in the industry is behind them, how wonderful they are. You know, they still got 30 guys, 30 jocks a month getting suspended or getting fined for the whip rule. You're still stealing owners' money when they hit them 9 times or 10 times instead of 9 times. And the shoe rules are still a mess. It just is, I think people are, just kind of, I had a relatively prominent trainer say to me, because, you know, in the beginning, I was totally for it, because I thought it would, the cheaters, the guys who are obviously playing with an edge, and we were going to standardize rules. He goes, that's not happened. That's not happened at all. It's the same people are doing fine. You know, that everyone has question marks about it. The rules are more different in some ways than they ever are. I mean, well, California last week instituted rules about injection, joint injections. And I'm not going to say they're not, the rules aren't fine. I mean, they have, they're probably a lot of good to that rule. I think they go a little bit too far in some ways, especially for therapeutic stuff, not talking about, you know, like the PRP. You're injecting the horse's own blood back into their system. But anyways, that's a technical thing. But the fact of the matter is now, all right, well, their rule is now different than everyone else's rule. So if they have the Breeders' Cup in next year, say, and you come from New York or you come from Kentucky or you come from somewhere else, well, the rules that you operate under on a day-to-day basis are different, again. And that wasn't supposed to happen. This was supposed to standardize things. I think that's frustration, because, you know, you got all this controversy about the shoe rule, and it's a ridiculous rule. It makes no sense. It's a problem that wasn't even a problem. And the fact is that, I mean, it's a giant waste of time, money, effort to even discuss it. So I understand if you're an owner or a potential owner, you look at the business and there's a lot of downside, there's a lot of negatives, and your 10% number, I think you're shooting very, very high. I think it's about 2% of horsemen get most of the horses. But that's a problem that's just gotten worse over the years, exasperated itself, and it's just a sign of the times. I mean, last week I put a Twitter tweet up about four tracks. It was on a Wednesday. Five tracks running, North American Thoroughbred tracks running, four tracks ran at the same time. You know, and someone put a comment on. Matter of fact, Jim Goodman, you know, he jumped in and he's like, you know, I can't believe, you know, these tracks would not run again, you know, would want to run against our signal, because obviously Keeneland's the strongest signals. And someone else put it something and said, you know, a couple of those tracks aren't even really trying. And it's the truth. And it's too bad, you know. I just don't want to be the, I don't need a downer on Breeders' Cup entry day after guy, but the sales are strong.
Well, that's that a lot of people see that, and you know, you wonder essentially the proverbial tail wagging the dog moniker associated on that front. But I did allude to part of the thing you and I talked about yesterday after Ed Martin was with us, and I saw where Bloodhorse and picked up Byron King listening in and wrote about Ed calling for Mitch McConnell to come up with $50 million for the industry. Chuck, what's your thought on these racetracks that are going to, at some point, the rubber's going to meet the road here after January 1st, and invoices are going to come out. And I can tell you, the state governments are not going to go into their pocket. And I thought one of the most important things that Martin said yesterday was that once you take these responsibilities away from the state racing commissions, you're not going to rebuild afterward. And so there's the potential here to dismantle a structure that, you know, works the whatever way it works. And I'm sure some people are saying, oh, good, because it doesn't work. They don't really know the inner workings of racing commissions. They're just judging by, you know, the occasional misstep. But in the meantime, the threat of turning these invoices over to the racetracks is, to me, a potential fiasco. And a further recipe for disaster. I mean, what are the racetracks supposed to say? I mean, why should they have to start paying this bill? And horse players and owners, we already have made the point that we're paying the freight here, left, right, and center. So I mean, where's this going to come from? This money.
Well, this has been the question I've had for years.
Yeah, we discussed it 100 times.
How is this all going to be paid for years and years?
Yeah.
And no one wanted to talk about it.
No.
And the fact is, I believe that the federal government cannot force the states to pay for it. So they have to volunteer to pay for it.
Yes.
And, of course, I think Kentucky's commission is going to pay for it. But, you know, they're rolling in money in Kentucky.
Yes.
And Kentucky, of all the racing commissions, has mostly horsemen on there, you know, whether they're owners, whether they're breeders, whether they're people somehow associated with the industry. Unlike virtually every other commission, and yet people don't even know it, but the racing commissions are not part of the horse racing industry. The racing commissions are thrust upon us. They're not. We didn't choose them. These aren't mostly government bodies that. Most states are named by the governor or the heads of the legislature get to name people. In a lot of places, there's
politicos.
People that have absolutely no horse racing experience.
Right.
So these are not, you know, organizations that are for the benefit of horse racing, despite whatever flowery prose might be written in the racing and the New Jersey Racing Commission's website. It's, look at what they did last year with the whips in New Jersey. They just said, oh, hey, no more whips at all. They didn't come to the industry to ask about that. They just did it. But no, to get back to your point about the paying for it, well, I mean, that's been the elephant in the room for a long time. And like you said, very few of these state governments are going to volunteer paying for it. Therefore, it's going to be billed to the racetracks. And when you look, I don't know the exact formula, but it's based upon number of race dates and based upon field size and things like that. So essentially, the tracks that are doing the best, that are doing a good job, they get taxed more.
Right.
Which, of course, leads you to the question, well, how long until some of these middle of the road tracks say, well, hell, why are we running so much?
Exactly.
You know, field size. I mean, they become zombie tracks, you know, the tracks that get the slot money and they just run to run because they have to. Well, then there's not going to be any effort made to that. And of course, the tracks aren't going to just eat that money. They're going to pass it along. It's going to go to the owners, and I believe it might wind up being going to the bettors too. I think in the original incarnation of the bill, there was language that said it couldn't be, but that's gone.
Well, and Eric Hamelbeck and I drove this point home repeatedly. And no one had a peep to say on a going basis when they extricated the specific item that takeout could not be utilized to increases in takeout could not be utilized to pay for this. And that had been in every version of the bill of the what ultimately is the integrity, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. Every version, until the last one, until that night auditor bill slipped under your hotel door at 3:30 in the morning, and nobody said anything. Everybody just sat back and shrugged their shoulders. So when that invoice hits your auto pay, we'll see how people react. But they certainly didn't have a word to say about it, a year ago December.
No, and that's typical of this industry as well. I mean, look, we as an industry this is the way we've always done it, group. A lot of owners don't want to be involved in the politics of the game. They just want to own horses. The trainers, in a lot of ways, are either those who aren't strong enough to really be able to say anything, or if you're a guy and you got 150, 200 horses, trust me, you don't have a whole lot of extra time to do these things, to get involved. And it's the bettors have no voice. So that's kind of, that's why we wind up in a situation just like we do. And that, like, who's supposed to guide us? And that goes back to leadership. That goes back to leadership.
Jack, where are you headed? Are you headed back this way or south?
Yes, I was thinking I might pass you. Are you going
to... I lost you there for a second.
No, I'm near Cincinnati.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm passing by Turfway briefly.
How about that? How far will you drive through the night? You weren't feeling great yesterday.
I've recovered. I'm not going to die, I don't think.
Good. All right, because we need you.
Last night, at one point, I was thinking about, I better get a will made up and might have to write it down here. And, old saddles go to Steve Bigg. Buy my Miami Dolphins football cards collection. Who that's going to go to. I'm against the consolations. I'm on for Keeneland Jim.
Yeah.
I'm against consolations.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation, actually.
And I probably have one of the greatest percentages in the history of horse race gambling.
Going 4 for 5. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm like the Cal Ripken of 4 out of 5. But it just seems like, I don't know. But on the other side, I love the $3 pick, Turf Pick 3. That's, like, to me, the best bet out there. It's just it's a great bet, and it shakes off a lot of the people that want to cover eight horses a race. And you've got the small denominations. But, I'm actually, Barry and I are going to do Wednesday, we're going to do a show covering both days of the Breeders' Cup.
Nice. I was going to ask.
So we're going to do some written stuff out there this week, too. So
good.
Mike Dempsey asked me yesterday to do a little stuff for him and his ADW Play Up Sports, I believe it's called. So we're gonna do a little something there. But my advice for the Breeders' Cup is you need key horses.
Yep.
You need to find a couple of key horses to key on. You cannot spread every race because it's
prohibitive.
It just is. You just have to make stands, and you have to know the races to spread. And the one thing I will say about the turf yesterday didn't seem to be real firm. They did get some rain the night before, and it was cold, but the rails were also out a million feet, so it's hard to tell how accurate it really was at the times. But they're not supposed to get much rain. They're supposed to get some rain this weekend, but then there's not supposed to be much rain. So the turf has been pretty firm at Keeneland. I think they set like 3 or 4 stakes records already. So that might play a factor in for the European horses. They obsess over the ground.
No, we'll be on site, and I appreciate the opportunity to get a little bit of the sale perspective. Good luck, to Pete and company with like Kerry.
Those guys, yeah. Those guys should have more business, man. They do a really good
job.
Yes,
they do. They got a great track record.
Committed to their clients, and they work hard, man. They work me to death.
Well, up and down that hill, that's good for you.
Keeneland doesn't have a hill. Or, I mean, Fasig doesn't have.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You're out in the paddocks. That's right.
They have 52 tents now.
Jesus,
it goes from Newtown Road all the way to Franklin.
It's good for you,
man. Listen.
It's good. You should be in career peak shape between walking around Saratoga and all summer, and then now a nice tour of the paddocks.
Saratoga had me in pretty good shape because Saratoga, you got to walk no matter where you're at. Saratoga, about walking. But after Saratoga, I lagged a little bit. So
I love it. All right. Well, I will pass along details, and we should get you and Barry with some opinions next week. All right.
We could do that.
We'll do it. All right.
We have opinions. You got it, man.
Chuck Seibert, everybody. Cannon Shell on your Twitter, and the Going in Circles team. We've gone in a circle for 2 hours, and we're going to come through with hour three after a break. David Hill is going to join us. First of all, we're going to bask in the pleasure of the conversation Wednesday or Tuesday? I'm losing. What's today? Thursday. So it was Tuesday that we had the visit with Dan Delgado about the Let It Ride podcast, and everybody has signed on and signed up. So it all starts with Dave Hill, because Dave is the one who made it be known that he had been on it and what the whole concept was, which, as you could tell from that conversation, we found amazing. Let's take a break, and we'll come back with Dave Hill, and got to get to Rich Eng today as well. Hour three at the races Thursday, SiriusXM, back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on SiriusXM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most